This week on Hyperspace Broadcast, we take the time to introduce a character no one has ever heard of. Batman. Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcast, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it's worth revisiting. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about the Batman movie, Batman, Mask of the Phantasm.
Yeah, this... what a movie, man.
Yeah.
This movie, among all things that should be noted first, is that this movie had the scene that I remember from a kid of Alfred walking into the room on Bruce Wayne making out with a woman and then turning around and just walking away like he's Grandpa Simpson.
Yeah, and that gif of Grandpa Simpson walking into the Maison Derriere from Of course, I can just pull the name of the fucking brothel Springfield out of my hat immediately with no reference. I think, you know, before we actually start talking about the movie, which we're gonna get to pretty soon, I just want to say, like, I dunk on the DCEU a decent amount, I would say.
EU, what is EU?
The DC Expanded Universe, which is what their fucking live action cinematic universe is being called, to differentiate it from the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I guess DCCU didn't sound cool enough.
I hate these names for universes.
Yeah, well, fucking get used to it, because that's how everything is now. But
I know, yeah.
But I tend to dunk on the DCEU a decent amount, and I think with good cause. But watching this made me realize something, which I've talked to friends of mine about before, but I don't think I've ever really mentioned it on this podcast, which is that I do not envy the task of trying to kind of make a new interpretation of these characters and, you know, sell it to a widespread audience, because the DCAU, which would be DC animated universe, which is, you know, Batman the animated series, Superman the animated series, Justice League, Batman Beyond, etc. I'm pretty sure, like, I don't just speak for myself when I say that maintains like a huge mindshare for me.
Yeah, right. Well, geez, like, yeah, I've only seen a handful of like Batman things, like probably 4 Batman movies total from all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've seen Batman with Jack Nicholson and Jack Nicholson is Batman.
Yeah, good that lord, would that would be insane. Michael Keaton.
No, with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. Yeah, seen Batman and Robin. Less said, the better.
With I've a cast of great like actors who are all terrible.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen Batman the Dark Knight, which I quite enjoyed.
But it's just called The Dark Knight.
Sure. And I've seen Batman and Mr. Freeze, Sub-Zero.
Yeah, sure. Like, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at, though, is I think it's interesting, and it's an interesting challenge to, I guess, Warner Brothers right now to pull this whole thing together, that for me, like, I have extremely specific iconic versions of basically every DC character already set, like, very much so, and it's difficult for me.
League.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, those are really well-done versions of these characters, and, like, this version of Batman, fucking Kevin Conroy is Batman to me. Like, it's hard to see, you know, and to a lesser extent, like, the Chris Nolan Batman dude whose name always escapes me for reasons that I don't understand. Yeah, fuck. Why can I never remember? Like, if you ask me, oh, who's the guy in American Psycho? I'd be like, oh, Christian Bale. But for some reason, as Batman, I never think of it. Whatever. The point is, like, these are iconic versions of these characters, and it's hard for me to divorce, like, that expectation from what I'm seeing on screen.
Yeah.
Which Marvel doesn't have a problem with, because I have no conception of Marvel characters outside of the movies, pretty much. Like,
yeah, right. That's, yeah, I'm kind of the same way a little bit. Like, I watched Justice League when I was a kid, enjoyed it. Not all of it, but parts of it. And nowadays when I see stuff from, like, DC, and it's just like, nah, I don't know. It doesn't quite have the same attitude. I don't know.
Yeah.
I also haven't really seen things from DC. I've just seen, like, trailers for shit from DC, and I was like, nah, not gonna see it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I've, of course...
You see all those.
Yeah, I've gone to see all of it because I really like these versions of the characters, and yeah, and I am a rube, frankly. I am. I'm not even gonna pretend that that's not true. But it's like a weird dilemma where I love these characters because of this show, and that's part of why I want to see it work on the big screen. Yeah, but at the same time, because I love these versions of these characters, it's hard for me to see it on the big screen because it's different inherently, in a way that personally I am annoyed by. And I know that's a super controversial opinion to say that I dislike the direction they're going in. But, you know, I do honestly hold it, except Wonder Woman, which was pretty good. But that aside, let's start actually talking about Mask of the Phantasm, because...
Well, yeah, and the thing about Mask of the Phantasm that I really like, that I'll go into a little more later, is that, you know, the reason why I brought up that the four Batman movies I've seen is that, well, that's not, relative to all the Batman content, not very much Batman. I would say watching three movies of a single character is still kind of a lot. And I haven't... Batman Mask of the Phantasm had a lot of stuff in it that I'd never seen in Batman before.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen, you know, Batman having these kinds of doubts or these kinds of different things happening that we'll get into. But I've really enjoyed it for that aspect.
Yeah, right. But before we get into that kind of stuff, I want to do our sort of standard, I guess, interesting tidbits about this work, and then sort of a primer on Batman, although that's probably totally unnecessary. The interesting tidbits, mostly, I think it's crazy that this movie was, I guess, released theatrically, which itself isn't crazy, but what is strange about it is that it was originally intended for a video release, and then Warner Brothers decided, no, it's gonna come out in theaters, which means that it was produced in like 8 months, which seems like an insanely short time for anything to be made that's released theatrically. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, of course, I'm getting this from Wikipedia, which mentions that most animated theatrical movies take like 2 years to produce.
Yeah, right.
So this is made in a third of that time.
It looks great.
Yeah, you know, right.
It definitely doesn't seem like a rushed movie.
Exactly. It's actually crazy to me that that's even possible. It's also funny that the only other animated Batman movie that's been theatrically released, in a limited release, but still it was on big screens, is The Killing Joke. So, again, not really a controversial opinion to say that that was a pretty disappointing movie, but it was.
I know almost nothing about it.
It's based on a really well-known comic that I have not read.
Yeah, I know that.
And it features a pre-comic thing, because the comic wouldn't have filled the time, really. That's about Barbara Gordon totally having a crush on Batman and being angsty about it, which is maybe the crappiest possible version of that character. Oh, God. The less said about that, the better, much like Batman and Robin. But yeah, I mean, I think
So who is this Batman?
Yeah, right.
This character that is probably more well-known than most major religious figures across the entire planet. Who is this character, Doug? Who is this masked strange man?
Yeah, who is this, like, fucking deity of American pop culture mythology? Who is Batman? Mm-hmm. Well, Batman is Bruce Wayne, a wealthy businessman who his parents were murdered when he was a young boy, and he decided to fight crime in his home city of Gotham, which is basically New York, but way shittier.
Sorry. I'm just picturing the person listening to this podcast being like, finally, someone can tell me what Batman is. Everyone's been talking about it, and I've never seen his origin story.
Fucking, I've been hearing all about this Batman fellow. Like, what's his deal? Who is he? I don't get it.
No one will tell me.
Oh man, I like, you see, this is a thing, like, I'm trying to we're honestly trying to make this more accessible for things that, you know, people wouldn't necessarily be familiar with.
Sure.
I feel a little bad at laughing at that idea, but at the same time, like, yes, Batman is such an obvious thing that I can't really imagine anyone listening to this not knowing about.
He vowed to fight crime. He put on a bat costume.
Yeah, he dresses like a bat, beats people
with
up.
Gadgets, and he's really smart, and he doesn't have superpowers, and he has this butler named Alfred who's fun, and he doesn't kill people.
Yeah, and that's he's Batman. Voiced in this by Kevin Conroy, who is a, like, again, to me, the Batman voice. He also voices Batman in the Arkham games, except, of course, Arkham Origins, which is best left undiscussed, maybe. But, of course, the Batman, you know, animated series is produced by Bruce Timm and Paul Dini. Kind of, I believe, Bruce Timm was the artist and the character designer, while Paul Dini did more of the story stuff. They're kind of the fathers of the DCAU, which, again, is the animated universe, which is all of these shows. So, of course, you know, Batman might not need an introduction, but there it is, if for some reason that's not true in this case. But let's talk about Mask of the Phantasm itself, finally, because it's pretty damn good. And one of the interesting things about it is it's kind of split into two storylines, more or less. We have sort of a flashback past storyline that's, you know, cut back to every once in a while, and then more of a present storyline. Just for the sake of this not being a big bunch of gobbledygook, we're going to kind of break it up into those two things. So we'll talk about the past first, and then talk about the quote-unquote present, and then talk about our thoughts. So to start off with, pretty early on in the, I guess, pre-Batman past segment, we have a young Bruce Wayne meeting this woman named Andrea Beaumont at a graveyard, where he is, I guess, visiting his parents' headstone. She is visiting her mother's grave, and they hit it off pretty immediately. Bruce is sort of conflicted by this because he is currently operating as a vigilante, but not yet Batman, actually. He's just kind of wearing, you know, a ski mask.
Yeah.
Beating up criminals.
I love seeing that, too, in like early Batman gadgets, like very kind of crude stuff, like a hammer.
Yeah, I'm not sure gadgets is the right word, considering he literally uses just a hammer at one point.
Shuriken.
Batarangs or whatever. But he, you know, he's been fighting these criminals. He's kind of miffed because, as he points out at one point, they're not afraid of him. Like, he's capable of beating the shit out of him, or out of them. But when he shows up, they're just like, who the hell is this guy? And start shooting at him instead of scared. So he's trying to deal with that. Meanwhile, he and Andrea are having this romance, and he is trying to decide if it's worth continuing to pursue the vow he made to his parents to fight crime, or if he should kind of go down this other path to marry Andrea and have like a normal life. Eventually, he decides on the normal life after a brief visit to the Gotham World's Fair and its World of the Future amusement park, which I only mention here because it comes into play later.
Yeah.
And, you know, he proposes to Andrea with, like, the most Hank Hill proposal.
Here's his thing, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, it's like pretty funny, actually, how, like...
You figure it out.
Yeah, how weirdly awkward he is with it.
Yeah.
Honestly reminded me of Hank Hill's, like, "I surely am not unfond of you, Peggy, I tell you what," which is apparently...
Can't say I love you.
Yeah, that proposal. But, she accepts, and then she just leaves, gives him a letter, like a Dear John letter, saying, you know, "I have to go," or whatever. And yeah,
"can't do this," gives back the ring.
Yeah. And this is kind of like the final straw that, I guess, pushes him to an extent into becoming the Batman. In that this is the point where he finally, like, makes the costume and puts it on and scares the shit out of Alfred, both because he's terrifying looking and because this is his, you know, transformation into that, as I said, deity of American pop culture mythology. Like,
yeah, Alfred knew that this is the birth of a star.
Yeah, yeah. It's
this guy's going to be huge.
Yeah, he's calling up his fucking agent.
Nobody will need an introduction to him. Just gonna keep hounding you.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right, but no, it's the point where it's you know, it's seeing Bruce really turn to this the mission thing, which is a big part of Batman in Batman the Animated Series and the DCAU in general. So that's kind of the past storyline. The present storyline features this character who's never actually named in the movie, but based on the title, I'm pretty sure it's the Phantasm, who is going around killing mobsters, essentially. And
almost has, like, powers like the Reaper, or like Reaper from Overwatch. Like, it actually kind of resembles that in a lot of ways, in that it's a dark cloaked figure with a mask that just, like,
that's
turns
a skull.
Into... Yeah, that, like, turns... It's almost like a Darth Vader mask, and it kind of... It kind of turns into, like, mist and disappears and, like, can become corporeal, it seems, or non-corporeal, I should say.
Yeah, and I guess apparently it's at least partly based on the Ghost of Christmas Future from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. Yeah, somewhat visually.
Is that a unique character for this movie?
Yes, it is. I guess that this movie, in a lot of ways, takes a... parts from other Batman stories. I guess apparently Batman Year 2, a lot of it, and there's a character in that called the Reaper, which the Phantasm is based on, but it is a different character. It's an original DCAU character, much like Harley Quinn originally was. But anyway, the Phantasm's going around killing mobsters. Batman is being blamed for it because this is a cartoon, and you see a dude in a cape, gotta be Batman, even if the cape is gray, not black. Much like Sailor Moon being unrecognizable despite the haircut.
Sure.
It's a pretty classic thing. So, you know, Batman starts kind of investigating the Phantasm. Meanwhile, Andrea Beaumont returns to Gotham. Batman eventually determines that her father, Carl Beaumont, was mixed up with these mob guys that are getting killed off. One of them contacts the Joker, who just shows up basically halfway through the movie.
Yeah, he just wanders in. He wanders to this meeting place with this guy, and the meeting place happens to be the now decrepit future world of the World's Fair ride.
Yeah, right.
Which is an awesome scene, just like seeing like all the awesome, shiny, beautiful stuff with the animatronics and shit. It's now just complete junk. And the Joker just lives there. And yeah, it's just like, oh, what? Joker's in this movie. What the hell?
Right. And the thing that's interesting about the Joker showing up is, like, I didn't realize the Joker was in this at all.
Yeah, neither did I.
And apparently that was kind of the intention with the movie originally, but a lot of the advertising showed the Joker, of course. You know, he's an iconic character. So I guess we got the ideal version of this.
Yeah, we had the authentic experience.
Yeah, of the Joker just showing up suddenly, unexpectedly. Much like in, I guess, several Arkham games. But, you know, the Joker shows up, this old, at this point, mob boss wants to use the Joker to kill Batman because he's still under the impression that Batman is the one committing these murders. The Joker, unsurprisingly, doesn't really care to be just used as a hitman. So the next scene is the Phantasm showing up at this mob boss's, you know, like, apartment or house or whatever. And it's revealed that the Joker's already killed him and has planted a bomb, which nearly kills the Phantasm after the Joker determines
that. And gave him rictus grin, of course.
Yeah, of course. And after the Joker has determined that it's not Batman committing these murders. So, meanwhile, in all of this, Batman is being pursued by the police, who believe that he's, you know, murdering people, essentially.
Yeah, and after, like, right after this, when Phantasm escapes, like, the police are just completely after him and are told to use force, and it's just, like, a pretty brutal escape scene where Batman has to try and get out and navigate around the police without, obviously, without killing them, and, like, he's getting really fucked up and shot and shit. Not really shot, I guess, but, like, blown up and shot.
Yeah, and bleeding, which is something that I really didn't expect to see. Like, it's a surprisingly violent kind of turn of events. So he tricks the police by using his cape and hood to, like, you know, act as though it's him. And then he's running away.
It gliding off on its own, and they just shoot the shit out of it. Like, they have, like, eight people shoot at it.
Yeah, of course. And they have a SWAT team and everything. So he runs away, you know, maskless, and ends up getting picked up by Andrea Beaumont. She and him go back to Wayne Manor. They have sex, really. Like, it's pretty clear that that's what's supposed to be happening. Alfred, Alfred walks in again, which is the point where you said, oh, hey, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. They call back to Alfred walking in again, and then, you know,
turning around and walking out.
Morning after scene where it's like, yeah, okay, they fucked.
Sure. And, you know, during this and through other investigation, Batman / Bruce discovers that her father was working with the mob.
Yeah.
And that at this point she tells him that her father owed the money. The reason that she left originally was because they had to escape. Because they, you know, couldn't collect the money in time to pay off their debts. They eventually did pay off their debts, but the mob still sent a hitman after them.
And what do you know? That hitman, turns out, it was the Joker.
Yeah, pre-acid Joker. It's the Joker when he was still a guy.
To see, like, human Joker.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, like, really worried, honestly, when they showed a human Joker, you know, like, pre-Joker Joker, because for a minute...
Pre-insanity.
Yeah, for a minute I was like, oh, shit, no, like, please, please don't make this into a Joker origin story as well. Like, I don't want that. I just want, you know, for some reason I was concerned that that might happen. Of course, it does not.
Yeah, they didn't bother showing, like, how Joker ended up to be the Joker, just that this is him beforehand.
Yeah, right. So, eventually, this kind of culminates in Andrea tracking down the Joker at the World of Tomorrow exhibit, or I guess I should say the Phantasm, but it's revealed at this point that the Phantasm is Andrea. Her father was killed by the Joker originally, and she's been taking revenge. She and the Joker fight. The Joker gets the upper hand. Batman shows up, stops him from killing her. She disappears, and then the Joker and Batman fight while the Joker has rigged this whole place to explode on a timer if he doesn't deactivate it. Which is, I guess, Joker-esque to say the Joker, like, another thousand times.
Yeah.
You know, eventually they fight to a standstill. Everything's exploding. Andrea shows up and sort of takes the Joker as everything's exploding. There's a point where Batman is kind of begging her to reconsider her mission of revenge, and that she should stop killing people, because especially this version of Batman's golden rule is never to kill.
Uh-huh.
She refuses, everything explodes. It's implied, sort of, that her and the Joker are killed off, but back at the Batcave, Bruce finds a locket that she had, which strangely isn't like a Fisher Price locket. It looks like a regular like thing that a human would have.
It like doesn't play the Sailor Moon theme when you press the button.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's my only exposure to lockets in media before this moment was the Sailor Moon one. So it implies that she's still alive. Alfred kind of lectures Bruce about the, I guess, pit of vigilantism, that he could never have saved her because she'd already kind of gone down the slippery slope, if you will. And then we close the movie out with this song that opens with a kind of sexy sax solo. Yeah, sung
it's
by
the most ridiculous ending song.
Sung by Tia Carrera, who I only know of because of True Lies.
Yeah.
And the song is called I Never Even Told You, and it is the weirdest thing to end this movie on.
90s R&B sax just immediately kicks in at the end, and it's just like so much, like, it's just so crazy. it's not at all what I would expect.
Exactly. And of course, throughout all of this, all the music's been like orchestra. It's pretty much had the same soundtrack from Batman the Animated Series, but, you know, better produced. It sounds amazing, and then all of a sudden, fucking cue the saxophone.
I mean, this was the only like Batman thing I've really seen with like a romantic subplot, but like, I still don't think it was an appropriate ending song.
Yeah, and I guess I've read that the lyrics are meaningful in some way to the storyline, which I guess is cool, but you know, it dates the movie, as you said, after we finished watching it, and like, nothing else does at all.
Yeah.
And in all fairness too, though, I will say that there have been a few questionable music choices related to Batman that I can think of off the top of my head, such as Prince.
Bad Dance is great.
Yeah, but Prince featuring heavily in the Tim Burton Batman movie, the whole scene with the Joker in the museum.
Yes, Bat Dance.
Yeah, and then the fucking Beatles cover for the Justice League trailer, which, fuck.
What?
Yeah, the Justice League trailer has this weird cover of Come Together. Yeah, right?
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
That just doesn't work.
Nope. It sounds really strange, and I'm going to stop bitching about the DCEU, but fuck.
Because they're all together.
That music. Yeah, of course. Yeah, because, you know, much like Suicide Squad, it has to be the most literal possible thing that it could be. Uh-huh. Like, oh, man.
Suicide Squad was the lyrical version of the MASH opening. Suicide is painless. That would be insane.
You see, one thing I'm disappointed about with Suicide Squad still is that it wasn't produced in the era of time where Will Smith always made a rap for every movie. Because the music video for the Suicide Squad rap fucking song would have been incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine the Wild Wild West music video, but Suicide Squad.
Oh, man.
That would have been incredible.
You don't want to see my hand where my hip be at. You could use that line again. He's Deadshot.
Yeah, you could.
You don't want to see his hand where his hip be at.
That's true. That said, we're going to get to the break. When we come back, we're going to talk about our impressions of this movie in case they weren't clear. I'll probably rip on the DCEU at least one more time.
Yeah, sure.
And
I'll say yeah some more.
Yeah, I'll pull some more takes out of the freezer and, you know, pop them in the microwave.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about what's coming up next. Chucky saw.
Batman, how'd you get here?
Your angel of death awaits. Hey there, listener. It's time for the break. If you like the podcast, please consider subscribing or writing us a review on Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry, that's BLUBRRY.com, or iTunes. iTunes reviews are especially helpful for us. They actually acquire more listeners in a quantifiable way. And if you have the time and you really like the podcast, please consider writing a review. We would really appreciate it. You can also follow us on Facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter at HBpod. We post stuff throughout the week. We just finished up a Sailor Moon Fashion Week in honor of some of the truly outstanding costume designs in Sailor Moon. And I'm sure that we're going to have similarly fun stuff in the future. We also take listener-submitted bets for the shows that we're watching, the more long-form stuff. Unfortunately, right now, I'm not really sure what we're going to be watching after Tenchi Universe, and that's already kind of filled because it's a fairly short series. So following us on either of those social media sites is, we'll be posting at some point, probably in the next couple of days, to indicate what the next series will be for betting. Our next episode will be up on September 27th. And we'll be back to our thoughts on Mask of the Phantasm in just a moment.
Can't be too careful with all those weirdos around.
Alrighty, so we're back. And what did you think about this movie, Peter?
I really enjoyed it. I liked it. I quite like Sub-Zero. I like this a lot better, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure.
It's also a lot better than Batman and Robin. that definitely needs to be said.
To quote,
because that one's a contender.
Yeah, right. That I think nice most people have you. Fond memories about that movie in particular.
I was impressed by the animation quality, which, you know, I'm always impressed by animation quality. It doesn't take much, but if it's something as quality animation, I'll like it. I like the backgrounds to this. You told me they're all made of. They all did, like, chalk on the background.
Yeah, what I understand, Batman the Animated
Series. It makes
sense, because
there's, like, a literal grit in the background. Like, there's the grit of, like, I don't know, the pavement or whatever it was sketched on.
Yeah, it's like, black paper, I believe, with chalk how they did the backgrounds in
It's
BATAS.
Cool. I kind of couldn't unsee it, but it wasn't distracting.
Yeah, right. Like, it's a cool stylistic choice, for sure.
Yeah.
Better than, really, for example, CGI flames for no reason.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed seeing the these other sides of Bruce Wayne and, like, the romantic kind of edge of Bruce Wayne that I'd never really seen before. And also, like, how his, like, happiness in general, his newfound happiness, just completely clashed with his vow to his parents to stop crime. The point culminating in, like, this dramatic scene with a thunderstorm in the graveyard where he's, like, crying and yelling at the grave of his parents and, like, trying to figure out what he should do before Andrea shows up and like, kind of convinces him otherwise, sort of.
Yeah, leave his vigilante aspirations, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and that kind of doubt was a aspect of Bruce Wayne that I've never expected or seen at all. That character Batman always seems so completely confident and on the case, you know. Never seen him just be like, I don't know. And, like, this also shows a lot of, again, from my experience, new Batman stuff from his origins that isn't, like, his parents dying, which is, like, the most played out origin story shown again and again and again. And instead we get, like, the in between years, the teen years. Not really teen years, but, like, you know.
Like, yeah, the pre-Batman years.
Yeah, and seeing him, like, wear a balaclava and, like try and take out guys in, like, just normal clothes without any bat persona was pretty awesome. And it's a pretty awesome scene of just, like, an action scene of him, like, chasing down these criminals and trying to stop them. And this crazy, like, high-speed chase where he's climbing around in the semi-truck and stuff like that.
Yeah, right, smashing the windshield with just a hammer.
Yeah, with his utility belt that just has a hammer.
Apparently, yeah.
It's pretty awesome. I love, you know, I don't know. Like, Joker is obviously great. The Mark Hamill Joker has got to be
fucking
the best Joker.
And I want to...
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I want to point out, like, one of the reasons that this was that was such a pleasant surprise. I mean, aside from the fact that Mark Hamill as the Joker is just great pretty much across the board, was that he's like done with that role. And I thought that I'd experienced more or less all of the like work that he put into it.
Yeah, yeah.
So like it just coming out of nowhere, I was like, holy shit, this is new Mark Hamill Joker. Like,
yeah,
hell
right.
Yes. Man, I was so excited.
And he just kills it. And like, I was just kind of realized it's like, yeah, the Joker, especially Mark Hamill's Joker, is basically an evil Looney Tunes character that is set loose in what is otherwise a gritty and noir world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, he's in a lot of ways. Seriously, it's like he's a dark Bugs Bunny that just fucks things up. Sort of. I mean, there's a bit more of a clown aspect to it. Still.
Well, yeah. But I get where you're coming from, though, for sure.
Well, and there's like some genuinely disturbing scenes in the movie. There's one in particular. There's this councilman character we didn't bring up too much because in the end it doesn't totally matter.
Yeah,
it's
not
much.
That important.
Yeah,
to the plot,
but
generally.
He is like manipulated by the Joker and given this laughing toxin, and you see him in the hospital, and Batman like breaks in at midnight or whatever to interrogate him. And he just can't fucking stop laughing. And he's like, the doctors like come in before then are like, oh, you just have to relax. We're going to give you the sedative. Just chill. Just relax as best as you possible. And he won't like laugh and it won't be as bad. And then like when Batman talks to him, he just starts laughing and convulsing. And it's really creepy. And like he's like tears are coming out of his eyes. And you can kind of tell he's just in pain from this like terrible laughter that he can't stop doing.
Yeah, and of course,
and Batman's kind of causing it too, because he's like, Batman's kind of stressing him out, so he's like, it was like kind of chilling to see, because it's a really good performance, and it's really creepy.
No, absolutely, and it's also, you know, of course, he's laughing while confessing, like, horrible things.
Yeah,
this is the point where Batman learns that, Andrea's father was assassinated. Because this guy basically sold him out to the mob. Like, he worked for Andrea's father at the time, or beforehand. He knew where they went, and, you know, the mob came to him, and he was up for election. So he sold Andrea and her dad up the river to, I guess, get elected. But, of course, he's confessing all this, like, pretty dark shit while laughing maniacally. Yeah, it's genuinely pretty creepy.
I thought that was fantastic. Like, this whole movie was darker in general, definitely than Sub-Zero. That Sub-Zero was necessarily like a romp.
No, it wasn't. But I mean, this movie doesn't have like a kid sidekick, for example. Even though Sub-Zero handled that quite well, you know, like that
and
it
lightens
has
it a lot more death. And
there's no Robin.
Yeah. There's some, you know, the violence is more intense. There's a scene like I think Batman punches someone's tooth out.
Yeah,
he
punches
like,
Joker's
tooth out.
That's
right.
It's
that's
nuts.
Right. It's fucking crazy.
Again, seeing blood in this, because the DCAU in general is pretty bloodless. I don't remember ever seeing blood in any of the other shows. So seeing the Joker get a tooth punched out and his face bleeding is nuts to me. Like, I...
Yeah, right.
That boggled my mind. Yeah, like, I gotta say, I have to kind of agree with a lot of what you said. Like, I have a lot of the same stuff written down. I think one of the things about watching this movie that was really crazy to me was that we really didn't, like, talk at all while watching it.
Yeah.
Which is very unusual when we watch a movie. Like, you know, we'll typically be, like, kind of riffing on it, even if it's a relatively good movie. With this, we're pretty much silent through the whole thing, which, honestly, to me, says a lot about its quality.
Yeah, right.
And, like, yeah, I mean, geez, I'm a huge sucker for Batman storylines that involve the kind of questioning of how far you can go as a vigilante, especially in the DCAU, where Batman isn't, for example, clearly killing people by like running them over with his Batmobile, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Or just shooting them. Like,
That's yeah. What is that in? Like where he's basically just killing them.
Fucking Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Yeah. Like
Dawn of Justice.
Fuck. Ugh. Okay, gotta stop it. yeah, but like that's a big aspect of the character in the DCAU is the no kill thing. Like that's a huge part of it, and I think that this handles that really well with the Phantasm being kind of this, you know, reflection of what he could be if he were willing to cross that line.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So like, you know, that stuff just, I love it. When it comes to Batman media, the whole, the gravestone scene where he's kind of yelling, like begging his parents to let him go from a self-imposed thing that basically has nothing to do with them is like emotionally affecting, actually.
Yeah, definitely.
It's, you know, I could rave about this movie for like probably another 10 minutes, but I think that I'd basically just be repeating the stuff that you said and repeating myself. I do want to say, oh, and I guess the other thing that's important to me is that I think it's pretty unique to see kind of the thing that pushed Bruce Wayne into becoming Batman specifically. Like,
yeah,
not, you know, a vigilante, but
when I always Batman. Assumed that, yeah, I always assumed that the Bat persona, like that aspect that he adopted was just like from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I never figured there's like this kind of middle ground where he's like, yeah, I'm just a guy and I'm gonna fight crime.
Right. And I mean it depends on the telling, usually, sure. Of course. But I like this version a lot, and I like specifically that Andrea Beaumont is the person who kind of pushed him into that, because I'll put a pin in this here, but that matters again at some point in the DCAU in a pretty minor way, but in one that I found like really interesting after watching this movie.
Oh, that's cool.
But I mean, yeah, I don't know, like again, I could go on about this for a while. I could go on about the DCAU in general for a while. Last episode we talked very briefly about G Gundam, which is meaningless in terms of this, but I bring it up because you said that that's the reason that we started this podcast to an extent. The
reason why I did.
Yeah, the reason why I did is because I am really excited to like get you into the DCAU as a whole, because sure. Pretty much all of it played on Toonami. And
yeah.
Like, to me, that is some of the like best animated storytelling across multiple series that I am aware of. Like, it's, I could gush about it at length.
Yeah, and I've only seen a handful of like the Batman the Animated Series stuff, and really loved what I saw, like as a kid and a little as an adult, and definitely excited to jump into that.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Justice League. I saw probably a bit more of than any of the other stuff, but really loved it. Yeah, all that stuff I'm pretty psyched to get into.
Yeah, and Batman Beyond is like way better than it has any right to be.
Yeah.
Given the basic premise of Batman in high school, but you know, obviously we'll talk about all that stuff at a later date. But as far as this movie goes, let's get into our recommendation. Of course, the categories being visit, which is a thing that you would recommend to someone wholeheartedly without any like caveats. A revisit, which is a thing that's maybe not quite as good, but that you think is worth it if someone had seen it in the past and might be interested in picking it up again, or best left in the past, which of course is something that neither of these things apply. It's generally kind of something you'd rather not have your memories of spoiled. What do you think? I have a feeling I know, but you know, the formality.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this is best left in the past. Fuck this movie.
There was like, it's sad that there was actually a second rose. Wait, what?
No, this is a visit, man. This is a great movie. Like, I would recommend this to anyone.
Yeah, and of
anyone, like, at least with an interest in Batman.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say the same. Like, it, of course, this is really well done. There's a reason that it's really well regarded. Like, you know, I went into it with pretty high expectations. I've heard it spoken of in the same breath as the fucking Dark Knight trilogy, which is everybody's, you know, best Batman shit. I mean, depending on the person, obviously. The point is, I've heard this spoken in the same breath as stuff that is of objectively high quality, at least one part of it. I think that it lived up to the hype, I guess, which I don't usually feel. So, absolutely a visit. So, yeah, I mean, it's good. It's on Amazon. You can rent it. It's pretty easy to get a hold of.
Yeah.
But let's talk about what we're going to watch next a little bit. I mean, I don't really want to, you know, get into the territory that we're going to go over with the episode itself, but Tenchi Universe. That's
Tenchi Universe.
It's going to be a weird follow-up to this.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. You know, yeah, they're very... they're not similar.
No, not at all.
I could have tried to riff that.
I mean,
not
like,
really.
You know, I guess in the vaguest sense, like, Batman's a hero destined for greatness, and a lot of women are attracted to him.
It's true. It's true. There's scenes in both this and Sub-Zero where Batman's just surrounded by women, or Bruce Wayne is surrounded by women that he just kind of blows off. And they're all like, well, why don't you ever date anybody? We all want to fuck you. And he's like, nah, I'll see you later. And then Tenchi's kind of like that, only he's like more afraid of the affection. Though maybe Batman deep down is afraid of the affection too.
Ooh. He just is, we're getting really deep now.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that might be the sole similarity between the two series.
Yes. Tenchi Universe ought to be interesting. It's the longer series version of the OVA, basically.
Yeah.
They also do some other stuff with it.
I'm curious about it, but of course...
I enjoyed it when I watched it on Adult Swim, and the earliest of the Adult Swim anime block.
Sure.
Back when they had like a little robot voice introducing it.
Oh, yeah.
This is Adult Swim anime. It's just like, yeah. So I'm kind of excited to see that.
Yeah, I'm curious about it. Yeah, but Batman Mask of the Phantasm, it's really solid, lived up to the expectation that I had for it. Very happy with it. I don't really know what else to say. You should watch it. You should rent it. It's easy to find.
Not much else to say, I guess. Nothing left to say.
Oh, boy.
No.
Wow. That's a reference that literally no one will get except one person that is a friend of ours.
Yeah. Great.
Good, cool. We're doing great.
So,
at any rate.
Yeah. So I guess next we're going to check out Tenchi Universe and hopefully survive through that. If it's anything like Tenchi Muyo, I think it'd be all right.
Yeah, I'd say if it's on the level of Tenchi Muyo, it'll probably at least be enjoyable.
Yeah.
But that's our show, folks. That's all, folks, as Porky Pig would say in a way that... You know what's weird about this movie? Is that it opens with the, like, WB Kids thing with Bugs Bunny eating a carrot.
Yeah, yeah.
to open this movie that's, like, kind of dark and violent. I fucking love that. Anyway, this has been Hyperspace Broadcast. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And be sure to revisit us next week as we start down the relatively short road of Tenchi Universe. Acknowledgements. The clips used as bumpers were taken from YouTube videos Batman Mask of the Phantasm 1 out of 10 movie clip Your Angel of Death Awaits 1993 HD and Batman Mask of the Phantasm 6 out of 10 movie clip Your Hands Are Just As Dirty 1993 HD, both uploaded to YouTube by Movie Clips. The music is Vapor Diving by Anatech off the album Anatech Instrumentals Volume 6. More of that is on SoundCloud, and you should check it out. Rights were secured through Jamendo.